Okay, the meeting will come to order. Representative De La Forest moves the minutes of the March 6th meeting. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, carries. The first bill on the agenda today is Representative Lilly's bill 1178. He's on the committee. He should be here. Representative Lilly, you're using up your time.
Representative Lilly. Sorry, Mr. Chair and members. I thought my bill was at the end of the agenda. Sorry for that sloppiness. And I was up getting my fancy lunch here.
Representative Lilly, would you like to move your bill? And it goes to finance, is my understanding.
Yes, sir. I'd like to move it, please.
Okay, Representative moves file 1178. Do you have any amendments to get it in your shape, or is it okay to start?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's in good shape and ready to go.
Okay, Representative Lilly, would you explain your bill?
Okay. Thank you, members. I'm going to pass this to actually somebody that has great wisdom here and can offer some good insight on the bill here, so... are you up and ready? Okay.
Representative Lilly, thank you for your eloquence on this bill.
How was that? Am I doing really well? I can add some more at the end. Thank you.
Some further enlightenment. Is this Ms. McCormick? Okay, Ms. McCormick, would you state your name and your department and then explain the bill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat McCormick. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services in the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And this initiative clarifies the licensing requirements for operating a three-wheel vehicle. The statute currently defines three-wheel vehicles as motorcycles. However, it does not clarify how the testing should take place and does not, it isn't clear on how they, drivers obtain authorization to ride these vehicles on public roads. This issue has been discussed with State Patrol, who has had some problems in enforcing the law because it is not clear. And so the department has developed language that explicitly requires the testing for both two and three-wheel vehicles, and this proposal also specifies that a three-wheel vehicle cannot be used to obtain a two-wheel motorcycle endorsement. The proposal is supported by motorcycle and traffic safety committees and organizations, and also has been supported by the State Patrol and law enforcement.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick. Representative Lilly was the organization that former Representative Workman represents, the motorcycle group. Thank you. Were they consulted in this, and are they in support of it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we discussed it with the Motorcycle Safety Advisory Committee, and I'm almost positive that they have a member that's part of that committee, but I can't say specifically that they've endorsed it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other issues on this bill?
Mr. Chair and members, these...
Go ahead.
Okay. These motorcycles are, they're really something. You know, they're not... they're really quite fancy. They're the three-wheelers now that are on the market. I don't think there's actually manufacturers that make them. They're aftermarket products. Many of them are in the $30,000 price range, and they're a pretty fancy piece of equipment. And sometimes the riders that can ride these type of vehicles definitely cannot ride a motorcycle for medical reasons or for a variety of different reasons, and they still want to have the motorcycle-type experience. And So we, of course, want to have that available. And so this bill kind of clarifies the license process and keeps them separate from the traditional motorcycle to the three-wheel. So that's
thank you.
The essence of the bill.
Oh, Representative Pelsford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if someone is qualified to drive a motorcycle currently and they have the more difficult license with the motorcycle, are they able to drive the three-wheel? Or is it just that the three-wheel is less difficult and so you want them to be separate?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, the issue is that we need the testing needs to be different for these vehicles, and if they have a three-wheel endorsement, it's listed as a restriction currently on the license. So you still have to have that restriction, but oftentimes law enforcement has been challenged because the law isn't clear right now. So we still require them to have a separate test if they come in to us, but oftentimes a person that has a two-wheel endorsement thinks they're able to ride a three-wheel vehicle, and they're really not. They have to have that restriction, so we would prefer to have it separate and have the law clear so drivers understand that as well as all law enforcement, and we don't have these challenges coming up because the testing is different.
Representative Pope. Oh. Okay, are there any other questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I just want to offer one more comment to Representative Holberg, and I did not check, you know, to with the groups, and I pledge to you that I'll look at that and check on it, because I'm curious. There's nothing in here about helmets or anything like that, but you know, nonetheless, some of the details, you know, maybe there is more controversy that we don't know, and I pledge to you that I'll check on it.
And Mr. Chair, as much as we all love to see former Representative Workman, we don't like to see him mad, so.
We don't like to see him mad?
Mad.
Representative Lilly, so this isn't your intentional vehicle to get into that issue?
No, definitely not.
Okay, I assume that you renew your motion then to pass this and send it to Finance Committee. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Passed.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay. The next bill we're going to take up is Bill 738, Representative Greiling's bill. Representative Greiling, would you step up to
738.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not know what my witness looks like. Could you please call her up? It's Dr. Virginia Lupo.
Virginia Lupo? Is Virginia Lupo in the audience?
Not yet.
Representative Greiling. Do you need her on?
No, Mr. Chair, I think I can go it alone.
Okay. Representative Greiling, that probably is the best idea. Would somebody like to move Representative Greiling's bill?
I'll move it.
Representative Paymar moves Representative Greiling's bill. Is there an amendment for the author to get it or not? I don't see one. Okay. Representative Greiling, then would you present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Paymar, for moving the bill, and thank you, members of the committee. House File 738 is an idea that was suggested by the Hennepin County Attorney General's Office, Attorney's Office, for a couple of years ago to Senator Betzold, Senator Don Betzold, who does civil commitments in his professional life away from the legislature. And because he and I have worked on other civil commitment legislation, he asked if I would carry this bill. And the problem is that there are women who are pregnant, who are chemically dependent, who come before doctors, who try their best to convince them to stop using while they're pregnant for the sake of the fetus, but the tools that are available do not always work. There are a couple of bills, one by House File 383 by Representative Slawick and House File 286 by Representative Abler, that would try to have more encouragement of women and put in funding for grants to encourage that. I support those bills. But this bill is a further tool in the toolbox. If all else fails, according to the doctors and according to Dr. Lupo, who is the director of maternal fetal medicine at Hennepin County Medical Center, there are some pregnant women who just cannot stop. And if we had this legislation, then there would be a stronger tool in the toolbox that might even, with this looming large, convince those women to be voluntary as well. But if not, this could kick in. And what would kick in would be, we have an early intervention statute for mental illness. This would make that statute qualify for pregnant mothers who meet the definitions of a chemically dependent person. And then they could be court-ordered for up to 3 weeks they could be ordered to have to not use and be put somewhere where they would be getting some treatment. And according to Mr. Chair, that's what the bill does. But there's also testimony, I think hopefully passed out in your packet, from Dr. Lydia Harrows, who's a pediatrician and executive director of the Native American Community Clinic. And she was unable to be here. She did testify in the Senate. She's testifying to the need for this bill, saying there's no known threshold for the amount of alcohol causing damage during pregnancy. But this would, she said she works with women like this. She would like to have this tool for people who cannot be convinced to be voluntary. And if the treatment would be culturally appropriate, accommodate the woman's individual needs based on her assessment of children, length of treatment, and so forth, and that while the woman is in this short commitment process, there are some treatment programs where even her other children could come and be there as well. So that, in a nutshell, is the bill, Mr. Chair and members. And now, Dr. Lupo is here. I hope that's who you are.
Are you kind of a close and personal friend, like all of us said, my close and personal friends, Dr. Lupo?
Mr. Chair, Representative Freeling, I'd like to speak in favor of this amendment. I'm the chair of the OBGYN department at Hennepin County Medical Center, and I'm just here to tell you that there truly are women who are so completely stuck in the middle of the whirlwind of their substance abuse that they truly do need this kind of commitment. I don't think this is something we're going to use often in this state. I personally don't think there'd be a need for it as much as 25 times a year. I think that's a high estimate. But there are some women who are completely incapable of handling their substance abuse on an outpatient basis, especially while they're pregnant. And most women that we have committed under other for other substances of abuse have been grateful when they have finally been able to sober up for at least a few weeks and to start focusing on the rest of their pregnancy. So I would strongly support this legislation and would be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Paul.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, and Representative Growling, I don't say this to do anything to torpedo your bill, but I actually had a bill like this last year or similar to this with Senator Roebling. I support what you're doing here, and I think it's a good idea, and I appreciate you bringing the bill forward, and I hope that members on both sides of the aisle will support it.
Are there any other questions? Okay, Representative Greiling, Representative Paymar renews his motion to pass, and this one, I believe it goes to finance, correct? Mr. Carger, it's my understanding, you can nod yes or no, that it goes to finance?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I think it could go to the floor or to the whatever router has to go there, but there is a preliminary note, fiscal note in your packet that the Senate did, and it shows that there is no cost. There's no cost to the state, and there's no cost to the local government. And that is because, as Dr. Lupo says, we don't really expect it to be used very much. It's there as a tool, and hopefully it deterrent this tool actually ever being used. Senator Betzel said when he works with people, with his clients who are apt to be committed, sometimes if you say, you know, if you would go voluntary or else this happens,
Representative Riley, rather than repeat a bill when it looks like it's passing.
Mr. Chair, I'll be quiet.
You should be quiet. if you prefer, we'll send it to the floor, and then if it gets called to finance, that's okay. Representative Paymar, is that okay to amend your motion? Okay. Representative Paymar renews his motion to send it to the floor and with passage. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Dreiling, do you want to present your next bill?
Mr. Chair, for this one, I really do need Sue Adderholden from Nami, Minnesota. Is she here yet?
I don't see
Mr.
her.
Mr. Chair, my witnesses are slow today. I'd be willing to wait if you want to take Representative Anzalone.
Representative Skryling, we would prefer that than to repeat your testimony on the last bill again. Representative Anzalone, there you are. Representative Anzels, I believe you have an author's amendment, and then I have four other amendments. Yours is the 203 amendment, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and members, that's correct. You have the 203 amendment, and in addition to that, I have a very brief oral amendment, if I could.
Okay, let me first, I see four other amendments. Does anybody know who the A3, A4, A5, A7? A3 is Holberg. Chris, I'm sorry, Representative De La Force, did you have one of them? Or
yep.
A4?
5 and 7, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, you've got all three?
I will take ownership of those three.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out time-wise what we're going to do here. Okay, we will try to, we will somehow do this one in a half hour. Representative Ansel, since there's so many amendments, how many people are going to testify in opposition to this bill, first of all? Three, looks like. Okay. And Representative Ansel, how many do you have?
Mr. Chairman and members, with me to present the bill is Brad Lethel from the Minnesota AFL-CIO.
Is there anyone else?
No.
Okay. I would say we'll give each side 5 minutes in because I want to devote enough time to the amendments and questions. So we'll take your side first for straight 5 minutes without questions, and then they would get 5 minutes without questions, and then we'll let members start doing amendments and then questions at the end. Representative Ansels, does somebody want to move his bill? Representative Bingham moves Representative Ansel's bill.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that the motion was that should go to the local government committee.
Oh, I was going to do that at the end. We've got it written down here. Representative Ansel, do you want to just go ahead and present your bill then?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, to get this in the shape that I'd like it, may I move the 203 amendment first?
I will move the 203 amendment for Representative Ansels to get it in the shape he wants. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, carries. And
thank
you have
you,
another
Mr.
amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then a brief oral amendment, if I could. Page 1, line 20, after the word received, please insert a comma. On line 21, please eliminate the word or. A comma would be inserted after the word responded. And then add the words or forwarded.
Representative Ansel, where do you add those words?
After the comma, after the word responded.
Okay.
Please add the words or forwarded. Please eliminate the word to so that the first sentence in subdivision 2 under prohibited practice would then read, an employer may not refuse to hire a job applicant or discipline or discharge an employee because the applicant or employee has received, comma, responded, comma, or forwarded a communication from an employee organization or labor organization.
So, Representative Ansels, you also want to delete the first or in 121, is that correct? You didn't mention that
correct.
Before.
Correct.
Oh, you did? Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, all in favor of putting the bill into the author's way he wants it, then with that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Okay, Representative Ansels, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, this bill affects public workplaces, private workplaces, workplaces where there is a collective bargaining agreement, and workplaces where there is a merit shop. The bill is designed to provide protections to workers through the negotiated agreement outlining specifically what the rules and policies will be regarding employee communication. Communication in the lunchroom, communication in the hallway, communication in the parking lot, electronic communication, communication on the telephone. We are finding an increasing incidence of intimidation, recrimination, and a general atmosphere on the part of some employers, a minority of employers, fortunately, who are overly preoccupied what we think, what I think, are rights of workers to communicate with one another. We have examples of collective bargaining organizations' communication to workers regarding social events, regarding meetings, regarding events outside of the workplace, being interfered with by employers. We think that that's inappropriate behavior, and we think the remedy to that inappropriate behavior is a requirement which is in this bill, which will allow workers with employers to sit down and design a policy that is reasonable, that both sides agree to, and that is published and posted in the workplace. The remedy section of the bill, I would refer you to, in situations where there is a collective bargaining agreement, the grievance procedure already in place, already agreed to by the employer and the employee organization, would prevail. In a situation where there is a merit shop, the damages would be limited to wages and benefits lost by the worker because of the violation, the costs of the organization in producing the communication, or $1,000, whichever is greater. And the court would be awarding court costs and reasonable fees. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the reason, as I understand it, the bill is here. The bill has been heard in Commerce and Labor. The bill has received a fair amount of scrutiny. And I feel comfortable that this bill is needed and necessary. And certainly employers will have an opportunity to negotiate with their workers to provide these protections.
Representative Anzels, now I recall this bill in Commerce, and I remember that the only reason it came here was Subdivision 3. So my problem is you amended parts of the bill that aren't in front of our committee. It's my understanding that we can't amend those parts of the bill, so I think you'll have to do that someplace else. The testimony should be all on Remedy Subdivision 3 and on the, I don't think we can amend the parts of the bill that aren't appropriately in front of this committee. They're outside the jurisdiction of this committee. I remember hearing that bill at the time, and there was a discussion of whether it should go here even. I think I'll indicate that that the amendment that you had will have to go on a different committee or on the floor. That would be my understanding. But if you want, what you should do is go ahead with your testimony on the remedy issue. That's what I mind. Representative Coles or Hover?
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, I don't think that, with all due respect, I don't think you can unilaterally undo what the committee's already done. We've already adopted the Anzels Amendment. I'm not aware in my 4 years here that there's ever been any kind of, I've never heard anybody say that an amendment's not germane in committee. In fact, I've heard just the opposite from chairs over the past 4 years. And so, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm a little concerned if what you're saying is that, number one, that you're unilaterally withdrawing or trying to do something, undo something the committee's already done, and number two, that we're not going to have the opportunity to make amendments to the bill. I'm not aware of a germaneness rule in committee, and I guess I'm wondering what the authority is for saying that anybody doesn't have the ability to offer an amendment to the bill that's before the committee.
Representative Coles, there is. I've talked it over with various people. And the reason the bill is here is because the jurisdiction of this committee is with regard to Subdivision 3, the remedies. It wouldn't be here otherwise. And very often, I don't know what committees you've been on, but in my 10 years here, 8 of them were under Republican chairs, and very often they restricted what we could amend and what we could talk about during the meetings to specific sections as to why the bill was in front of that committee, and the other sections are outside the jurisdiction of the committee. Now, the other issue as to whether that's never come up, the issue as to once an amendment is adopted to put it in form, and if you request, I would allow then a vote on whether or not we would put it back in the shape it should be on to go in front of the committee. The jurisdiction of this committee doesn't go to the other issues, and therefore it is outside. And that's under 6.21. That's the chair's ruling, and it has been used vast number of times on the committees when your Republican chairs were chairing meetings that I was on the committee for.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate what you're saying, but I guess I would note a couple of things, Mr. Chair. I believe this is the committee that considers some constitutional issues. We're talking about communication and the rights of individuals to communicate, the rights of businesses to limit communication. I believe that implicates First Amendment issues. Number two, Mr. Chair, I guess I lost where I was going with this. Mr. Chair, I understand what you're saying, that this committee has jurisdiction over civil law issues, and so the penalties are certainly under the committee's jurisdiction. But the bill is in the possession of the committee right now. The entire bill, not just one of the subdivisions of the bill. The entire bill is within the possession of the committee. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to see the rule that I don't have my house rules here with me, but I guess I don't recall what 6.21 or whatever it is you said says, but I believe the bill's in the possession of the committee and is subject to being amended by the committee.
Representative, clause 6.21 says the chair decides what's within the rule or what's within the jurisdiction of the committee and the bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that, but you've decided that the bill is within the jurisdiction of the committee or it wouldn't be here. And so the bill is before the committee, and therefore we ought to be able to offer amendments to the bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coles, the 6.21 speaks. I don't have a copy. I guess I do have a copy. An amendment offered in committee must be on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee. Whether an amendment is on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee is a question to be decided by the person chairing the meeting. And that's what they've used before, your own chair from your party.
Thank you for reading that. I appreciate that. I guess my question then, Mr. Chair, is doesn't this bill implicate the First Amendment? And if we can't talk about communication issues in here and the rights of employers and the rights of employees in this committee related to amendments that or to issues that clearly fall under the First Amendment, what committee do we have that discussion in, if not the Civil Law Committee, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, I wondered if we could resolve this by just, if you would entertain a motion to reconsider on the previous amendments that were allowed in, perhaps this would all be moot then, because it is the decision of the chair, it's the decision of the body in terms of what committee's bills are referred to, and it's your prerogative in terms of what's before the committee. So I think properly, perhaps now, if you just would entertain a motion to reconsider on those previous amendments, we could dispense
with
this.
That's what I was going to get to, Representative Lesher, if you want to make that motion.
I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is to reconsider the amendments that were sought by Representative Ansel's initially. So
Mr.
that we
Chair, can I get a roll call on that, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Then first we vote on the motion to reconsider. All in favor of the motion to reconsider, say aye.
For a roll call on that.
Oh, on the reconsider or on the,
no, on the
actual?
Reconsider.
Okay. I'm sorry. All in favor of Representative's motion would vote aye if you favor the reconsider motion. So clerk will read the roll.
Chairman Mullery.
Aye.
Representative Bigham.
Aye.
Representative Cornish.
No.
Representative DeLaForest.
No.
Representative Emmer.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Kalin. Representative Coles.
No.
Representative Kranz.
Yes.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Olin.
Aye.
Representative Kamar.
Aye.
Representative Saylor.
Aye.
Representative Simon.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Westrom is excused.
Yeah. Kalin's excused also. No. It's 11-6 with two excused. Motion is to, let's see, we reconsidered, so then the motion is to remove the amendments, right? No? Oh, I'm sorry. The motion apparently is to rule that the amendment is out of order. So therefore, we're back to, could you go ahead with speaking about why the bill is here, the remedy section, so that we can get on with it? Thank you. Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, we just, amendment passed to reconsider the amendments. So now we have to reconsider the amendments.
That's what
I thought, but I was told I was
we have to vote on whether or not to leave them as is or to undo them, and I believe there was two, an oral one and a written 203 or whatever. And I guess I, at this point, I'd just like to make a comment. First of all, I...
Representative Fulbert, that's what I thought, and I have been corrected, but I think they've thought it over, and I think we're correct.
Well, Mr. Chair, you have a motion to reconsider that passed, and not to then not reconsider would then be in violation of the results of John or Representative Lesch's motion. But I agree with Representative Coles that issues of speech are before this committee. I don't know why we're doing this. And from a practical standpoint, this place will grind to a halt if the practice is that we make no amendments to sections of bills that aren't typically under the jurisdiction of the committee. Time and time again, both sides of the aisle, for a variety of reasons, you will present a bill in committee, and in fact, I think we see a result of this here from some conversations I had with people that have seen this in other committees, in that there are minor concerns of language or lack of clarification. It is stated between the chair and the bill author and the proponents that they'll work on cleaning up the language or fixing it and address it at the next committee and get back to those people that have concerns expressed so that we keep things moving here. And I think in the case of the written amendment, there was a conversation in a prior committee about having more explanation of that part of the bill and that it would be taken care of in the next committee. And so I would just caution the committee that, you know, if we're going to go down this road, that we make no amendments, that don't strictly have in areas of bills that we don't strictly have jurisdiction over in this committee, we're going to be sending poor bill authors back and bouncing back and forth to committees that they've already been to, or having amendments on the floor. And I cover all of that with, I believe that the chair or that the author is correct in being able to amend any part of this bill, and that it definitely relates to free speech issues. And I don't know any other committee in this body that's going to address those issues.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lash.
I just want to point out two things. First of all, in response to Representative Holbrook, I remember my first term I sat on Chair Rhodes Committee for Government Operations. As in, during that term, everyone knows that, well, people knew that the rule stated that any bill with a regulatory component would succumb through Government Operations. Well, as we know, there were a lot of big bills that year that came through because there was an overwhelming Republican majority, and there were some bills with controversial topics in them, and it was Chair Rhodes' position that we would only consider those portions of the bills that had the regulatory components. Otherwise, every single committee took their shot at this bill, which the committee room was filled to the rafters with people, because there would be 3-4 hearings on the same topic on the bill. And that's why they separated out and had only certain committees consider specific parts of the bill. So I think you're taking the correct position on this. Otherwise, certain high controversial bills are going to have a hearing multiple times. I would just state it for the purposes, though, parliamentary speaking, that I think we reconsidered that we put the bill in the position that the author wanted, and so I think procedurally the next proper step would be to take that vote again, thereby nullifying the effect if in fact we chose to do that as a committee. That would just, those two points all I want to make.
And that was what I had originally thought, and you make a good point, and that's the problem, that if we start there's so many bills that have little penalties or something like that, and the only reason they come here, they're huge bills. We're going to spend the next 9 months here hearing bills if we're going to open them up to everything, and they really are outside our jurisdiction, so we don't belong doing that. But Representative Johnson is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to confirm the approach that you're taking. I think it is a very well-traveled road, Representative Holberg. It's been certainly been my experience in the 6 years I've been here that committees have focused on the area that they're supposed to be focusing on, and that was the direction we have gone. So I don't find anything particularly unusual at all in the direction you're taking as far as sticking to the topic that the committee is designed to take.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lesch, Representative Johnson. The only question I'd ask of the chairman is, what is the jurisdiction of this committee? I thought the title of the committee was Public Safety, Civil Law. I didn't think it was penalties or remedies. Frankly, this discussion that sounds like we're going to relive a horrible experience that a couple of you have been impacted by, and I, even though I wasn't here, I'll apologize for it, because apparently it was very uncomfortable. But we're in the here and now. We're not living yesterday. This isn't supposed to be, I think somebody on the floor used the term payback politics. This is frankly outrageous, and it's intellectually inconsistent to argue that the only thing that's before this committee is a remedy or a penalty. The reason there is a remedy or a penalty in the proposal is because we're setting a standard of conduct. We thought we were here to talk about civil law issues that deal with the citizens of the state of Minnesota. This bill sets a certain requirement, a certain standard of conduct that is expected of certain citizens, employers, and employees, and then it has a penalty that goes with it. To suggest that you can somehow separate one from the other, and that's all we're going to talk about, is frankly, I think, outrageous. And I would... Again, I respect the chair's ruling, but I disagree with it, in case you can't tell, vehemently.
Well, Representative Emmer, I guess I think it's, I mean, to use your word, I think it's outrageous to take the opposite side that you're taking, if we want to get into extreme language. But I've been here 10 years, and this rule has constantly been used, and it was used over and over by your chairs, and I didn't object because I thought they were right, that not everything is within every committee's jurisdiction, and I think this is clearly the only reason this came here was for that. It was a question of whether it even had to come here for that reason, but we did decide that it had to come here for just the remedy section.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer.
All I'd like to do for the record is if we can move on from what Republican chairs did or your chairs, I think it would be very beneficial to the process. If you thought it was done wrong, or if somebody here thought it was done wrong, then let's forget about what was done wrong and let's make a commitment to do what's right.
Representative Emmer, as I said, I thought we're doing what's right. And I've talked to various people who have been around here a long time, and I think it's to do what is right is to do what's within the jurisdiction of the committee and the reason the bill came here. And Representative Emmer, I think as far as you tried to, it seemed that you were indicating that we were getting back at Republicans for years, and I assure you, I think it's very evident. In my first 6 years here, I could not get a bill heard by a Republican chair, and I've heard a number of your bills in the first 2 months of me being a chair. So,
Mr. Chair, let me apologize to you personally for anything that someone might have done to you and your bills. I appreciate the way you're running the committee. I'm just disagreeing very strongly with the precedent that you're setting today and the way that you're interpreting the rules today.
And Representative Emmer, I understand that, and I think we disagree with that. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then is it your intent to send this bill back to Commerce and Labor so that they can put this amendment on the bill in their committee?
No, just do it on the floor. The author would like to go to the floor so that they can do it there.
Mr. Chair, one last question. I'll let you move on.
Okay.
I promise. Can you
yes,
tell me and the members, both sides of the aisle, what committee has jurisdiction over First Amendment issues, if not this committee? Because I may want to amend the motion at the end here to make sure that it gets to that committee.
Representative Anzels?
By the way, I like you all.
And we like you.
I think you're great public servants. And with all due respect, I do believe that
what
this
rule is that?
Bill needs to go to local government as well.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And Representative
and Mr. Chair, just another point. Okay, so you're not going to allow these, or you're advocating that these amendments be taken off this committee. Will these amendments modify the behavior related to the remedy? So for these amendments to not be addressed at this point related to the remedy, then you're going to send the bill somewhere else. You've suggested that the amendments be put on the floor. The ramifications of the amendment are related to the ramifications of the remedy. So, I mean, I'm flabbergasted here, to tell you the truth, and what's happening, because I think that it's going to make it very problematic for your bill authors to be able to make some sense in how things move through.
Is local government going to do the First Amendment, Mr. Chair?
That's up to what the local government committee decides. I
don't
know.
A question of Representative Hillstrom?
Sure. Well, I'm sorry, Representative Qualls.
Does your committee have jurisdiction over the First Amendment, and will you consider the issue in your committee?
Representative Qualls, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Qualls, it is within the chair's discretion, as you saw in the rules, to take a look, and so I will absolutely be looking at what amendments are offered in my committee, and I will read the rules, and I will determine if the local government committee has jurisdiction over them. Before, I'm not going to commit that I would hear particular amendments if they are outside the jurisdiction, but I will consider them, absolutely.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I mean, you've got the author's amendment right in front of you. Will you take that one in your committee?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think she stated that she can't decide at this time, which seems pretty reasonable. She hasn't had a chance to talk to anybody yet.
Absolutely.
About that.
I'm disappointed, Mr. Chair.
Representative Qualls, Representative Qualls, one point. You mentioned the Constitution. I've asked research about what is, with regard to the Constitution, constitutional amendments are sometimes within the realm of this committee. That's all I know about that. I haven't had a chance to go any further.
Mr. Chair, I understand that, but it's not about a constitutional amendment. It's about a constitutionally guaranteed right, not only in the Minnesota Constitution, but in the United States Constitution, related to speech. And we are regulating speech on the part of employees and the ability to limit speech. And I don't know how we get around the fact that that falls within the jurisdiction of this committee. I'm going to be done, Mr. Chair, because I know you want to move on. I'm terribly disappointed. I think this is, I agree with Representative Holberg, this is a dangerous precedent to be setting, not only for Republican authors, but for Democrat authors, too. I'm disappointed.
Representative
West. Mr. Chair, coming in on this discussion a little late, hearing about it yesterday, that it may come up. You said these amendments can be offered on the floor. Will they be germane on the floor? Or will your side of the aisle stand up and say, this isn't germane because it should have been put on a committee, therefore we'll either refer the amendments back to committee, or they won't be germane anyway. So how do we put them on the floor?
Or
are they germane?
Representative Westrum, the last thing I would do is try to judge what the speaker is going to say is germane or not with regard to whether she would say they're not germane because they should have been put on in committee. I doubt that that's going to be any among many responses she would have. I doubt that that would be one of them, but I sure would not predict what the Mr. Speaker would do.
Mr. Chair, then would you commit, and other members of the DFL members of the committee, commit to standing up when somebody may raise a germaneness question and say, absolutely not, this is germane, that's what I told him to do in the committee?
Mr. Chair. Representative Westrum, I wouldn't. Like Representative Lesh?
I can remember the first time I had an agreement to get an amendment on a bill, a Republican bill on the floor of the House, and I broached an agreement to with the Speaker to make sure that he'd let it on, and no members of your side of the aisle would stand up and object to it, and sure enough, you kept your side of the bargain. But you, Mr. Chair, made a germaneness objection to it, and so you can't even trust your members to stand up and do that. So, you know, I don't know if anyone can guarantee that they're going to get theirs on.
Just one point with regard to Representative Lesh's point that he just made I was the one that stood up and was upheld by the Republican Speaker on the germaneness issue, and Mr. Representative Lesh was quite upset with me and came over and expressed his non-desire to support my position on that, let's say.
I don't know.
And he was doing it for the Ramsey County lobbyist, and he said that Hennepin County was also supporting him. And since my cousin was the one that was in charge at Hennepin County and had told me the exact opposite, and I had been involved with Representative Mark Dizgins on the issue just the year before when Representative Lesh was not here, I knew all of the sides, and in fact the Ramsey County lobbyist who put him up to it has since many times apologized to me for the fact that he was behind us. So it's kind of funny.
But Mr. Chair, that doesn't answer my question. the question is, you stated as a walk-in that this amendment could be offered on the floor.
Representative Westrom, it could be offered on the floor. And Representative Westrom, the speaker is going to decide that, and I don't decide it.
Well,
and I'm not going to give a commitment now what I'm going to look into later. Just like you wouldn't.
You've got a situation here. The chair of the committee, who first said she has the discretion of whether an amendment is offered, now says she has to talk to somebody to decide if it would be offered in her committee. So she doesn't have that discretion, although she said she did. You said this could be offered on the floor because that would be the appropriate place to offer it. Members on this side asked what committee should we offer it in if it's not to remain in this committee. Nobody in the DFL party knows. The chair of the committee doesn't even know that it might be offered in. So could somebody give us some guidance as to what committees are going to be allowed to offer what amendments? I've never seen in 10 years of being around the Capitol that any amendment is not germane in any committee. I mean, policy committees pull out finance provisions of bills left and right, and if that isn't non-germane, I don't know what germaneness test you're going to impose. Maybe you could inform the committee of that.
Representative Westrom, I'm not sure that, are you talking about this bill or 34? Or there was a question, because something you said, people thought you were talking about Bill 34. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. 611.
Okay. Representative Westrom, first of all, we're not talking about a germaneness issue. We were talking about a jurisdiction issue here. A germaneness issue is a different issue.
What's the jurisdiction issue then, Mr. Chair, if it's different than germaneness?
The bill, except for the subdivision 3, is within the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee, which is where things were handled in there. The only reason it was sent to this committee, not because of any other jurisdictional rights that this committee had, was because of subdivision 3, and that was discussed in Commerce as to should it be sent here, and it was decided because of subdivision 3 that it did go here. And that's what we're trying to, we've spent a half hour trying to...
So, Mr. Chairman, in all due respect, jurisdiction is the word you use and germane is the word I use. They're both the same. Are you submitting today that there's going to be a written policy now that says the only thing we will deal with in a committee is the exact provision that brought the bill to that committee? If that's what you're saying, then I would just at least hope that's going to be the standard for both sides in the future, and I think, as Representative Holberg said, that's a very dangerous precedent.
Representative Westrom, I didn't say that. I said that things that were outside the jurisdiction of the committee, but Representative De La Forest is...
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll just ask one question of you then, similar, regarding trying to divine the parameters here and the contours of your policy. If, for example, hypothetically, if Subdivision 3 of House File 111 is within the jurisdiction of this committee, is it your policy then that any amendment that seeks to amend that subdivision is germane, or are you reserving the right to even rule an amendment that seeks to amend a subdivision that's properly before the committee? Are you reserving the right to rule that non-germane?
Just trying to define the
boundaries here.
If you had something concrete, I would try to get at it, but that's so open-ended that I there would be things that you could do to try and amend remedy, the remedy section. There would be outside the jurisdiction of the, what if you put in a remedy that clearly we didn't have, something like transportation funding or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, okay, Mr. Chairman, so what I understand then is that your policy is to reserve the right to rule on the germaneness of an amendment that even seeks to amend legislation that's properly within the jurisdiction of the committee. Is that the policy?
Senator De La Force, first of all, I didn't say germaneness, I said jurisdiction, and it would be, it's my understanding that we can't do something that's outside the jurisdiction of this committee, and I've tried to go with a number of people from longtime staff at House Research over this issue and longtime members, and that's my understanding. And with regard to if you wanted to amend the remedy section, and if what you want to do is within the jurisdiction of this committee, it would be my understanding that that would be acceptable. And with, I mean, it might not be acceptable, but it was something that the committee would take up and everything like that.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your patience. As I said, I respect your right to make these rulings as the chairman. But as I said, this is an important issue here. And I think this is an important issue on March 8th. Wait till March 22nd, and at least the old Civil Law Committee representative, Simon, you remember, we might have 50, 60, 70 bills to consider in one day. And so I think, Mr. Chairman, my respectful advice would be to define as clearly as possible the contours of your policy for every member of this committee, or I fear that Representative Holbrook is going to be absolutely correct. We are going to be here night after night after night after night, much to the frustration of not only this committee in a very bipartisan fashion, but our bill authors in a very bipartisan fashion. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make one comment. After consulting with the committee administrator for 8 years of civil law, the chair of civil law for 4 years, the chair of civil law for 2 years, none of us can recall any instance in which we didn't consider amendments brought before the committee. If the amendment was adopted and it changed the nature of the bill and required that the bill go to another committee, we then forwarded it to that committee for its review. But we have no recollection ever of not taking up amendments to bills in committee. There is no germaneness rule for committees, and with your 30-some committees, and if you want a strict stick to this strictly, I can't even imagine the chaos that's going to ensue.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Cameron,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the point that I believe is Representative DeForest about the many bills that are going to come before us on March 22nd. We still have more bills on our agenda. We've spoken to this issue quite a bit. I'd like to see us address the substantive issues before us. And while understanding the protocol issues that are being addressed, I believe we don't have a formal challenge to the ruling of the chair on board, and I would like to just say that we should move on and address the substantive issues that we need to get through this committee. So if there's a challenge, and I leave it to the chair to decide what to do, but I think we're ready to deal with the substantive issues of this committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, we are going to some point move on, and I think that you stated for at least 7 minutes your issues. We are going to have to move on. We have a lot of bills to do. I'll continue to discuss this with you, but Representative Holbert, I don't know, I wasn't on the committee when you chaired it. I remember it happening constantly with various Republican chairs on committees. I was mentioned Rest Bills End of Roads. That was just one. Representative David's, Representative, which ones? I just can't remember all the ones that did that. But
just have a question.
Representative Emmer, if it's short.
You have more
programs. Well, I do, but he doesn't want to recognize.
Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to one short question. If amendments are made in any other committee outside of this one that have to do with remedies, whether they be civil remedies or criminal remedies or other rights, will those bills, once they're amended with those types of issues, will they automatically come to your committee then?
Representative Emmer, I can't predict the future.
I think Representative Freeman is correct that we should move on, and I believe the motion was
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom,
I know you want to bypass me and you want to bypass people that have concerns.
No, Representative Westrom, we have heard your concerns. We've taken the
committee. Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin hadn't spoke before I spoke. And if he doesn't see this as substantive, that's the problem here. There's apparently a divide in what people see as substantive. And in 10 years of history, I have never sat on a committee, and I have sat on many committees in 10 years that have ever had a germaneness question. That's why bills move from one committee to another when amendments come forward. And so your jurisdiction, quote, last night when the committee administrator talked to me about amendments, the word he used was germaneness, Mr. Chair, not jurisdiction. And so you call it jurisdiction, germaneness, it's the same question, same issue. If we're going to start imposing a germaneness
question, first of all, we are not talking about germaneness, and he says that he said jurisdiction, and the fact is I've heard I have been there when your committee chairs, and as I said, Representative Emmer, we're not trying to hold somebody to what happened, but your committee's chairs ruled on germaneness that they weren't. I'm not saying that jurisdiction, but we do have to go on with the meeting. You know, you're beating something forever and ever, and we are going to go on with the meeting. At this point, I believe. Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, just a procedural question. What's the motion before us, and can we move on that motion and
I understand
proceed?
Representative Lesh's motion to going from about 25 minutes ago was to vote again to remove that. Isn't that what your motion was? Okay. All in favor?
I believe we asked for a roll call on that, and if we didn't, I am now, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emery, you didn't, but we will give you a roll call. You did have a roll call on the last one, on the reconsider motion. All in favor of Representative Lesh's motion, we'll vote aye.
Mr. Chair, this is a motion to undo both amendments in one
yes.
motion? Okay,
right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It was one motion. So, yeah.
Representative Mullery.
Aye.
Representative Bigham.
Aye.
Representative Cornish.
No.
Representative DeLaForest.
No.
Representative Emmer.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Kalin.
Aye.
Representative Coles.
No.
Representative Kranz.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Olin.
Aye.
Representative Paymer.
Aye.
Representative Saylor.
Aye.
Representative Simon.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Westrom.
No.
Mr.
Chairman, may I make a motion? I'd like to move to amend the House File 611 to strike Subdivision 3.
There's been a motion to...
And I'd like a roll call, please.
Okay. Representative Ansels, I bet you actually never heard of this committee. The motion is to strike Subdivision 3. Representative Ansels, I think you should be allowed to speak first on that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you fall asleep?
Thank you. I would be opposed to the amendment because I would want to keep the remedy in place and the collective bargaining protections in the language.
Representative Emmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the author. But it seems to me that if the two pieces are not connected, there's no need for Subdivision 3, and we're actually going to do you a favor by taking it off in this committee and letting you move on your way through the process. I think this is an excellent amendment based on the substantive discussion that we've had from the standpoint that you don't need a remedy
if it's not important to the standard of behavior that's outlined by the language of the bill. So I'd ask for your support in eliminating the remedy.
I think, Representative Immer, to be fair, you mischaracterized what he said, but do you want to discuss it anymore? Okay. Did you call for a roll call on this?
I believe I did.
Yes. Okay. So this time, I vote would remove the remedy section, and the author would, I guess, ask for a no vote. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's go ahead.
Chairman Mullery.
Aye. Oh, no.
Did you fall asleep, Mr. Chair?
No.
Representative Bingham.
No.
Representative Cornish.
Aye.
Representative De La Forest.
Aye.
Representative Emmer.
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Hoberg.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Kalin.
No.
Representative Coles.
Yes.
Representative Prinz.
No.
Representative Lesh.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Olin.
No.
Representative Paymar.
No.
Representative Saylor.
No.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Westrum.
Yes.
Fail 6 to 13. Okay, Representative Ansels, you're back to us. I think you probably just as soon not go too much further on the discussion. And
well, Mr. Chairman, I think everything's been said, but it's always quite possible that not everybody's had a chance to say it.
Yeah. You have.
But with that, I would ask for your support on 611.
That's the quietest I've seen, Mr. Lato. I'm trying to get the opponents to this remedy a chance to speak, and I see two up there. Two of them. Could you come up and speak on the subdivision 3? There's one right in the first row. So can you do it in about 4 minutes so that we can... Representative Ansels never got 7 minutes either. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulder. My name is Paul Larson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Employee Relations, and also in that capacity, I also serve as the State Labor Negotiator. I've been a state employee for over 30 years, and in the last 20 years, I've been involved in labor relations on both sides of the bargaining table. And while I will limit my testimony to the remedy sections, this is my first opportunity to be able to testify on this bill. And I think the record should indicate we certainly are supportive of First Amendment rights, but from an employer perspective, we have some very serious concerns about this bill in its entirety, but I will leave my testimony to the remedy of the bill. I've been involved in contract negotiations, as I said, for 20 years, and I've represented both sides of the table. I've also represented the employer in arbitration hearings for several years regarding consequences in the workplace. I'm not an attorney, but I have, in my opinion, carried my share of the arguments with respect to labor arbitration. One of the principles of labor arbitration and labor relations is that we are to keep these things out of the court. The courts decided that one of the keystones in labor relations was to let the parties to decide over terms and conditions of employment and keep it out of the court system. What I see in this bill here is that is a variety of judicial review of terms and conditions of employment. The concerns that I have about Section 4, first of all, it says a remedy for a violation. Now, the violation is going to be a communication. And so we're going to have debates. We're going to go on and on and on about what constitutes a communication. And so that is just the start of that. The other is that it says that if there's a grievance procedure, you can use the grievance procedure, or you can use civil action. So as I see this, if an employee is disciplined for inappropriate communications through this statute, they're going to have two choices. They're going to be able to go to an attorney, and they're going to go to court, and I think we all know how long this takes in district court. You're going to see this tied up for months, possibly years. If the court throws it out, then the employee will go to their union and say, now I want you to pursue this through the grievance procedure. And so ultimately, we're looking at hanging this up for a significant period of time. I would suggest that if there's a union contract, that's the way you go. If there is no union contract, then they go through court. But then, once again, you're bringing a term and condition of employment into the district court system. The other is that if it awards attorney fees, my experience has been in labor relations, the people that are advocates in the bargaining process are not attorneys. And I question why we're bringing this back further into the area of legalistic issues when this belongs to those who are not attorneys. And then finally, when you look at remedies, it actually has in the beginning of the bill, and I know I'm limited at, applicants. How are you going to calculate lost wages for someone who applied for a job and alleges that they had a communication with someone with respect to union business? How are we going to calculate wages for someone who applied for a job? And then finally, I think it's the violation. We have incidental violations. We have, to me, I think that is the court going to automatically default this? Are we going to be stuck with 2 years of back pay over an incidental violation? What kind of standards are going to be out there for the court to be able to determine what would be an appropriate remedy? So those are my concerns about Section 3.
I'm sorry you're from the League of Cities, but I forgot your name.
Mr. Chair, no problem. My name is Craig Johnson. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I'll keep my comments very brief. I need to make a...
Can you do it in about 1.5 minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I actually can. To connect the remedy, though, you need to refer to what the remedy is doing. If an employer disciplines or dismisses an employee improperly or fails to hire an employee, the remedy kicks in. The remedy is actually a significant concern for cities. It opens up a whole new batch of liabilities for us. If an employer, and in this case, if a city already has a union shop, there is already a grievance procedure in place for any time that an employee feels they have been wrongly disciplined or dismissed. That process is already there. This language adds that they also have the option of a civil action, which is something new, and it's an or in the language that's in this remedy section. I think we have significant concerns about what kinds of liability that could be and kind of a double jeopardy situation for the employer, possibly. The second is that there's already wrongful termination actions that an employee can seek if there's not an organized labor representing them. They feel that they have truly been discriminated against and wrongfully dismissed. There are civil actions they can seek. And thirdly, we have the same concerns about calculating damages in this. The damages in this bill are defined very broadly to be wages, benefits lost by the individual because of the violation, costs of the organization in producing the communication in questions, or $1,000, whichever is greater, plus the court shall award any cost and reasonable attorney's fees. It's not permissive to the court. The court shall, if the employee prevails in any apparently fashion at all, even if it's in a technical manner in the decision. So we have very significant concerns about the costs that this could bring to cities in cases that otherwise might have been fairly simple to resolve using existing grievance procedures.
Thank you. Just as a point, as a former attorney who, as a continuing attorney who has brought cases under a shell award, the judge can do the same thing, and as they've been pointed out and upheld in the appellate court, as I'm sure you know, that for shell award attorney's fees, they can award $100 and they're complying with the statute, so it's not much of a hit. We are going to, can you do it in a very short time?
Yes,
you with the chamber, is it?
I'll be very brief. Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. My name is Dave Dieterichs with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Appreciate this opportunity. I will keep my comments very brief. I'm going to echo the sentiments of the two previous testifiers in that not only does the Chamber believe that this entire bill would be preempted by federal law, but in terms of the remedies section, we're concerned that this would give an either-or option in terms of a remedy. If there is an employer that has a labor organization that has been certified and dealt with, then a grievance procedure would already be outlined in the collective bargaining agreement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Boy, you did a good job.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question of the witness?
Quick one, yes, Representative Irmer.
Sir, can you comment?
Just one second. Make it short, because we're going to vote at the end, but go ahead.
Sir, this remedy in the standard that it seeks to enforce, is this at all in violation of state and federal laws, existing state and federal laws?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, in terms of the employers that would affect our members at the Chamber of Commerce, yes. Collective bargaining agreements are under the purview of the National Labor Relations Act and under the authority of the National Labor Relations Board, and they dictate that under Section 7 and 8 of the National Labor Relations Act, the collective bargaining agreements are under the exclusive purview of both the employee or the labor organization and the employer, and then any grievance procedure outlined in that collective bargaining agreement would be the applicable way to resolve any grievances. And moreover, inside that, courts have decided under the Steelworkers Trilogy that arbitration is the appropriate process for resolving disputes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, before we vote, has there been a fiscal note requested on this bill?
We got a Representative Coles, it's going to local government. And
that was my question.
I know. I don't. I have not gotten a fiscal note on it.
Well, Mr. Chair, just for the author, I will be requesting a fiscal note on this bill. And I mean, we've got a new remedy we're creating in the courts, a new right of action, and we're applying it statewide to all businesses. Clearly, that's going to have costs not only to the court system, but probably a cost to Minsky, the University of Minnesota, and others.
And Representative Emmer, that will be brought up.
He's cold, so I remember.
Representative. You've been doing a good job of confusing us today.
And I'm sorry, I do not mean to confuse the chair at all. Mr. Chairman, I'm very concerned because you're making a point that we're going to vote on this right now. And frankly, we've got several amendments that go to the remedy that need to be considered. We've just heard testimony that the bill itself and the remedy are in violation of state and federal law. Based on everything that we've heard and the significant problems that we all understand exist, I think a motion to lay this on the table is in order so that we can get these things worked out. And I'd make that motion. And I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Emmer makes a motion to lay the bill on the table. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just in response to that, members, I think probably about three quarters of what we do up here, the argument could be made is in violation of federal law. I would urge a no vote.
And it's you're correct. It's not debatable. But
there was a
Representative Emmer, we're not, but you made debate in your motion, so I think his one or a few sentence response is appropriate to, because you did it probably two sentences in your motion. So the motion is to lay it on the table. The clerk will call the roll.
Chairman Mullery.
No.
Representative Bigham.
No.
Representative Cornish.
Aye.
Representative De La Forest?
Yes.
Representative Emmer?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom?
No.
Representative Hoberg?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Kalin?
No.
Representative Coles?
Yes.
Representative Kranz?
No.
Representative Lesch?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Owen?
No.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Saylor?
No.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Westrom?
No.
Yes.
Fail 6 to 13.
Mr.
Okay.
Chair?
Representative Holburn?
I'd like to move the A3 amendment. Mr. Chair, this amendment is actually based on a federal court case, the Lakeville Area School District was sued by the teachers' union. It has to do with workplace communication, and I'm afraid I know what's going to happen here, but I at least want to make the case that this is related to the bill. Teachers' union school, sued Lakeville School District because Lakeville School District was the only school district in the state that prohibited the teachers' union from distributing John Kerry election materials in the schools. The Lakeville School's position was upheld by the federal court that, in fact, Lakeville School District did have the right to regulate communications in their school and set an environment that was free of political activity in their school. And I'm afraid that with the standards that are in House File 611, that we are going to be subjecting our students to more political speech versus less. We hear every single election season the mistaken materials that are sent home in backpacks, the posted notices for fundraisers for teacher union endorsed candidates, and my amendment would put into state law a requirement that school boards implement a policy similar to that upheld by the federal courts and what is in place in Lakeville school districts at this time.
Roll call. Representative Hulbert, that isn't within the section we're dealing with, so the chair would rule it out of order within the jurisdiction.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to challenge the ruling of the chair and ask for roll call vote.
Okay, the challenge is to the ruling of the chair. Are you going to keep doing this?
Yes.
Yes, to run out of time so that we
don't
know.
We've got several amendments. Mr. Chairman, just so the record's clear, I'd just like to make it clear that we have several amendments, and we understand that you are trying to run this in an efficient, direct manner, but in an effort to respect both sides of the debate, we would ask that we be allowed to present our amendments and go through the process, the procedure, and we thank you for your patience then.
Representative Immer, we would have, if there wasn't so much argument about a ruling about an hour ago, we would have had plenty of time, and that's an issue that when your chairs did it, we accepted it. We didn't keep going for 45 minutes or an hour on the issue. We accepted the ruling of the chair, and it happened over and over.
And Mr. Chair, for the record, the former chairs of the Civil Law Committee did not rule amendments out of order in this committee for 8 years running.
And Mr. Chair, for the record, the chairs of the Regulated Industries Committee never ruled any amendment out of order or non-jurisdictional either.
Representative Westrom, I was never on that. It's challenged the ruling of the chair. Okay. All in favor of upholding the ruling of the chair?
Can we ask the roll call?
I'm explaining the rule of the vote. All in favor of upholding the ruling of the chair would vote aye. Clerk will call the roll.
Chairman Mullery.
Aye.
Representative Pickham.
Aye.
Representative Cornish.
No.
Representative DeLaForest.
No.
Representative Emmer.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Hobart.
I vote aye as the motion was to overrule the ruling of the chair.
The motion? No, it's not.
Mr. Chair, the motion that I made was to overrule the ruling of the chair.
That's treated as an appeal of the chair's ruling, just like an appeal of the speaker's ruling. Isn't that correct?
I am.
That's not what he said?
No, I know. I think she's right.
Well, we can't. What I'm going to treat it as is the same as a challenge to the speaker's ruling, and the motion there is to appeal the ruling of the chair. And a vote aye on that is to uphold the speaker, correct?
So, Mr. Chair, you then arbitrarily changed my ruling or my amendment that I made, my oral amendment.
No.
A motion, I'm sorry.
You challenged the ruling of the chair.
I made a motion. And then you changed the motion, is that what you're saying?
Representative Holbert on correcting the motion.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I just have a point of parliamentary inquiry. What is the question before the body?
Why don't we just vote on what it, the question before the body is appealing the ruling of the chair. That's the proper motion.
Wasn't our motion.
That's the proper motion at this point.
All right.
And the vote is then, if when we when somebody feels, is that not correct when you appeal the ruling of the chair? The aye is supporting.
Mr.
The
chair, can we continue the roll call, please?
Okay. Go ahead. The clerk will continue the roll.
I believe what I
stated was that if you vote aye, you're upholding the chair, and I think everybody.
And I would be a no, but that was not the motion that I made.
Okay.
Representative Holbert, your vote is a no then.
That is true, but it wasn't my motion we're voting on.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Kalin.
Aye.
Representative Coles.
No.
Representative Kranz.
Yes.
Representative Lesch.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Olin.
Aye.
Representative Hamer.
Aye.
Representative Saylor.
Aye.
Representative Simon.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Westrum.
No. No.
The chair is upheld 12 to 7.
Mr. Chair.
All, Representative Biggs.
I'd like to renew my motion to pass House File 611 and refer it to Gov.
That's what I was just going to do.
Local government.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A4 amendment.
All in favor of Representative.
Mr. Chairman, motion to amend is a higher motion. I move to amend the bill by moving the A4 amendment.
And Representative De La Forest, that's out of order at this time. We are going to vote on the...
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to go that route, I'll have to appeal your ruling. It is clear, even looking at your folder here, that a motion to amend is a higher motion. I have made a higher motion.
Representative De La Forest, you know that we can vote on these bills at a certain time. The chair is upheld on
them. Mr. Chairman, I don't know that. What I know is I have three amendments that are germane, as I can see it, to Subdivision 3, and I've moved the A4 amendment. I'm only asking to have my amendment placed before the body. And it is a higher motion. So says Mason.
One of them. Okay. Representative De La Forest, it's out of order. You're going to apparently challenge the ruling of the chair and ask for a roll call again?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will preface that by saying if that's what you're forcing me to do, but yes, as a member of this body, I'm attempting to vindicate the rules that we all live under. We all know this is a higher motion, and if I have to appeal it, I will. I'm not trying to gum up the works here. We've got an important bill here. Representative Anzalz knows we agree it's an important bill. He knows my concerns with the bill that we all ought to hear. If you want to lay the bill over, I'm happy to wait. I'm not trying to obstruct you, but I will definitely object if there is an attempt to ride roughshod over the rules here. There's no precedent for saying that a higher motion's been made.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's an important challenging the ruling of the chair, and if not, we can go on to the next amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kalin.
Is that a point of procedure there, Mr. Chair? Because I think Representative De La Forest just had the floor.
Representative Emmer, Representative De La Forest had the floor and was getting out of order in his statements. And
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear that. That was the point of order? Was that he was out of order? I didn't hear that.
Mr. Chair? Representative Kalin.
Point of parliamentary inquiry? Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the motion before us? Do we have another amendment before us?
Yes. We don't. The motion is out of order, and he was, I thought, going to challenge the ruling of the chair on that.
Mr. Chair, I believe that we have an amendment that's been moved and ruled out of order, and I believe Representative Bingham's motion is the motion before the body. Mr. Chair, parliamentary inquiry. Representative Lastrom, parliamentary inquiry. The amendment was ruled out of order based on what year?
On the jurisdiction that it's not 6.21 of the rules that it's outside the subject with outside, not within the jurisdiction of the committee.
Well, advice, Mr. Chairman, the A4 amendment seeks to amend subdivision 3. Now I'm at a total loss as to why that would be outside the jurisdiction of the committee. I'm sorry, but I'm clearly at a loss here. The A4 amendment seeks to amend lines 2.6, 2.7, and 2.8 in the heart of subdivision 3.
I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong amendment, Representative De La Forest.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, perhaps for the point of information for the body, the motion that I made was to move the A4 amendment.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Representative?
Mr. Chairman, point of information, I had moved the A4 amendment. That was my motion. I apologize for any confusion I created.
Representative
Bingham?
I'm a first-termer. I have a committee that starts in 5 minutes. I guess I'm looking for advice here. Are we going to appeal the ruling of a chair? Are we going to pass the bill? We
vote on amendments. That is up to the committee, and
I guess I don't understand. If we're going over our committee time,
and Representative Bigham, I think we're at the point where we have to adjourn because the other meeting is in here in 3 minutes, and it's been basically stalled so that we can't go on. And I, Representative Anzels, I'm sorry you faced
Mr. Chairman, we did not do anything to stall this. I absolutely that's objectionable, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to make the motion to adjourn now because I know that's what you're going to do. We did not do anything to stall this. What you're doing is you're not letting us offer amendments.
No, Representative Pauls, I'm letting you offer amendments, and if Representative De La Forest's amendment had been offered about an hour and a quarter ago, we would have...
Well, Mr. Chairman, the validity and merit of an amendment is not based on the clock.
Representative De La Forest, we are going to adjourn this meeting.
Then I would have just one point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman. What is the disposition of House File 611 right now? So I think the author would like to know as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to lay the bill on the table.
It's automatic when it's here. I'll lay it on the table. But that would be automatically when you adjourn when it's here.
Okay.